The Hobbit, Part 3, by J. R. R. Tolkien.
They walked in single file. The entrance to Mirkwood was like an arch leading into a gloomy tunnel made by two great trees that leaned together, too old and strangled with ivy and hung with lichen to bear more than a few blackened leaves. The path itself was narrow and wound in and out among the trunks. Soon the light at the gate was like a little bright hole far behind, and the quiet was so deep that their feet seemed to thump along while all the trees leaned over them and listened. Occasionally, a slender beam of sun that had the luck to slip in through some opening in the leaves far above, and still more luck in not being caught in the tangled boughs and matted twigs beneath, stabbed down thin and bright before them. Bilbo's sharp, inquisitive eyes caught glimpses of black squirrels whisking off the path and scuttling behind tree trunks. There were queer noises, too. Grunts, scufflings, and hurryings in the undergrowth, and among the leaves that lay piled endlessly thick in places on the forest floor. But what made the noises, he could not see. The nights were even worse. It was so black that you really could see nothing. Almost nothing. They could see eyes. They slept all closely huddled together and took it in turns to watch. When it was Bilbo's turn, he would see eyes in the darkness round them. And sometimes they would gleam down from the branches just above him. Horrible, pale, bulbous eyes.
Insect eyes, not animal eyes, only they're much too big.
They tried lighting watchfires at night, but they soon gave it up. It seemed to bring hundreds and hundreds of eyes all round them. Worse still, it brought thousands of dark gray and black moths, some nearly as big as your hand, flapping and whirring round their ears. So they gave up fires and sat at night and dozed in the enormous, uncanny darkness. All this went on for what seemed to the hobbit ages upon ages, and he was always hungry and thirsty. Then one day they found their path blocked by a running water.
This must be the river Bjorn spoke of.
The river of forgetfulness.
Look at this. There's been a bridge across, but it's rotted and fallen.
There's a boat against the far bank. Now, why couldn't it have been this side?
How far away do you think it is?
Not at all far. I shouldn't think above 12 yards.
12 yards? I should have thought it was 30 at least. But my eyes don't see as well as they did 100 years ago. Still, 12 yards is as good as a mile.
We can't jump it, and we certainly don't want to try to swim it after what Bjorn told us.
Can any of you throw a rope?
Oh, what's the good of that? The boat's sure to be tied up even if we could hook it, which I doubt.
I don't believe it's tied, though of course I can't be sure in this light.
Dory's the strongest, but Feely's the youngest, and he has the best sight. Come here, Feely. Mm-hmm. See if you can see the boat Mr. Baggins is talking about.
I think I can make it out.
Well, bring up one of the ropes and fasten a packing hook to the end. Now you guide the throw, Mr. Baggins.
All right, all right. Now, here it goes.
That's it. Straight over there. Not far enough.
No.
A couple of feet, you would have dropped it onto the boat. Now try again. I don't suppose the magic is strong enough to hurt you if you just touch a bit of wet rope.
I hope not. Well, here goes again.
Steady. You've thrown it right into the wood on the other side. Now, draw it back gently. Carefully. It's lying on the boat. Let's hope the hook will catch.
I think it caught. Now, help me pull.
Come on up. There Mr. Balin, good. Well, it was tied after all. That was a good pull, my lads.
And a good job that our rope was the stronger.
Who'll cross first?
I shall. And you'll come with me, and Feely and Balin. That's as many as the boat will hold at a time. After that, Keeley and Owen and Glowen and Dory. And next, Ori and Nori, Biffer and Bofer. And last, Dwalin and Bomb.
I'm always last, and I don't like it. It's somebody else's turn today.
Don't start grumbling against orders or something bad will happen to you. Ah, here's the last of our party now.
I don't like this, being last all the time.
Careful, Bomber, or you'll swamp the boat.
I won't.
Bomber's fallen in. He'll drown.
Quick. Don't let him. Throw him the rope.
Put it in the water.
Throw him back.
Good. He's got it. Now, pull. There. That's it. Pull him out. There we are.
Pull him. Is he dead?
No. He's asleep.
And smiling.
It's just the work of the enchanted stream. Well, we'll just have to carry him.
Oh, no.
Bomber? Why, he's as heavy as any two of us.
We can't leave him here. Four will carry him. The others will share the supplies.
Oh, no.
Yes.
They were a gloomy party that started again along the dark path beyond the enchanted stream. For days they struggled, burdened with the heavy body of Bombur, who smiled in his sleep as if he no longer cared for all the troubles that vexed them.
Is there no end to this accursed forest? Let's rest here for a time.
Look, Bomber's beginning to move.
Oh, where are we? What's become of Mr. Baggins' house? We were just having a splendid party.
We're a long way from Bag End, my friend, though I wish we were there.
You fell into the stream 4 days back and have been sleeping ever since.
What stream? Where are we?
The enchanted stream that's made you forget everything that happened since we started on our quest.
Well, if I could have something to eat, perhaps my memory would return. Oh, I'm starved.
I wish there was something to eat, but the provisions are gone. Even the water.
Oh, why ever did I wake up? I was having such beautiful dreams. I dreamed I was walking in a forest like this one, only lit with torches on the trees. And there was a great feast going on forever. A woodland king was there with a crown of leaves, and there was merry singing. Oh, I couldn't count or describe the things there were to eat and drink.
You needn't try. In fact, if you can't talk about something else, you'd better be silent.
Oh.
We're quite annoyed with you as it is. Now take your share of the supplies, such as they are, and let's get started before we all starve to death.
Go ahead. I'm just going to lie here and sleep and dream of food if I can't get it any other way. Oh, I hope I never wake up again.
What was that? I thought I saw a twinkle of light in the forest.
A light? Where?
I see it too. Off to the left of the path.
Yes. Torches and fires are burning under the trees a good way off.
It looks as if my dreams are coming true. Come on.
Wait. A feast would be no good if we never got back alive from it.
But without a feast, we shan't remain alive much longer anyway.
I don't think so. All right. I remember only too well the warnings of the wizard and of Bjorn about leaving the path, but we must do something. Now, all stay together and keep a sharp eye out.
Oh, look, it is a feast.
My own.
Smell the roast meat. Let's join them.
Food, food, food.
As the hungry travelers scrambled forward into the circle of light with the one idea of begging for some food, all the lights went out as if by magic. They were lost in a completely lightless dark, and they could not even find one another. Not for a long time, at any rate.
Have we found everyone now? Now stay close. Let's take a count. 1, 2, 3, 4. Is that you, Mr. Baggins?
Yes, I think so.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Only 13?
And you're 14.
I'm 14. Yes, quite right. So, we're all here. We'll just have to wait until morning to find the path.
Look, the lights are coming out again over there.
No rushing forward this time. I shall send Mr. Baggins alone first to talk to them. They won't be frightened of him. Remember, no one is to stir from hiding till I say.
When they got to the edge of the circle of lights, they pushed Bilbo suddenly into the full blaze of the fire and torches. Out went all the lights again, and complete darkness fell. Bilbo found himself running round and round and calling and calling.
Balin, Dory, Nori, Thorin, Oakenshield.
Bilbo Baggins.
Over here.
Baggins.
Here.
But the cries of the others got steadily farther and fainter. And though after a while it seemed to him they changed to yells and cries for help in the far distance, all noise at last died right away, and he was left alone in complete silence and darkness. So he sat himself down with his back to a tree, and not for the last time fell to thinking of his far distant hobbit hole with its beautiful pantries. He was deep in thoughts of bacon and eggs and toast and butter when he felt something touch him. Something like a strong, sticky string was against his left hand. And when he tried to move, he found that his legs were already wrapped in the same stuff, so that when he got up, he fell over.
What in the deuce? Let go of me! Get away!
It was a great spider who had been busy tying him up. He could only see the thing's eyes, but he could feel its hairy legs as it struggled to wind its abominable threads round and round him. Then he remembered his sword and drew it out. The spider jumped back, and Bilbo had time to cut his legs loose. After that, it was his turn to attack. He struck with his sword right in the eyes. The great spider went mad and leaped and danced and flung out its legs in horrible jerks. The spider lay dead beside him, and his sword blade was stained black. Somehow, the killing of the giant spider, all alone by himself in the dark, without the help of the wizard or the dwarves or of anyone else, made a great difference to Mr. Baggins. He felt a different person, and much fiercer and bolder in spite of his empty stomach.
Sword, I will give you a name. I shall call you Sting. Now we had better go to the aid of the dwarves. But first, I'll just slip on the ring in the event we meet any more spiders.
So, with sword in hand, Bilbo picked his way stealthily in the direction from which the cries for help had come. At last he came upon a group of loathsome spiders who were speaking one to another. They were talking about the dwarves.
It was a sharp struggle, but worth it. What nasty thick skins they have.
But I'll wager there's good juice inside.
They make fine eating when they've hung a bit.
Don't hang them too long. They're not as fat as they might be.
Kill them, I say. Kill them now and hang them dead for a while.
No, I saw one struggling just now. I'll show you. See this fattest one here.
No, it's the dwarves hanging in a row from that branch. That's poor old Bumber, I'll bet.
The giant spider nipped hard at the nose that stuck out between the threads. Bumbur yelled, and a toe shot up and kicked the spider straight and hard. There was a noise like the kicking of a flabby football, and the enraged spider fell off the branch, only catching itself with its own thread just in time.
Oh, you're right. The beast is alive and kicking.
I soon put an end to that.
The angry spider climbed back onto the branch. Bilbo saw that he must do something. He was a pretty fair shot with a stone, and finding several lying nearby, he found some nice, smooth, egg-shaped ones. Just as the spider reached Bombur, Bilbo threw. The stone struck the spider plunk on the head, and it dropped senseless off the tree, flopped to the ground with all its legs curled up. The next stone went whizzing through a big web, snapping its cords and taking off the spider sitting in the middle of it. Whack! Dead! They couldn't see Bilbo, but they could make a good guess at the direction from which the stones were coming. As quick as lightning, they came running and swinging towards the hobbit, flinging out their long threads in all directions till the air seemed full of waving snares. Bilbo slipped away to a different place and began throwing more stones and shouting.
Old fat spider spinning in a tree. Old fat spider can see me. Attacup, won't you stop? Stop your spinning and look for me. Old Tom Noddy, all big body. Old Tom Noddy can spy me. Attacup, down you drop. You'll never catch me up your tree.
Practically all the spiders in the place came after him. They were frightfully angry. Quite apart from the stones, no spider has ever liked being called Attacop. And Tom Noddy, of course, is insulting to anybody. When he had drawn the spiders farther and farther away from the dwarves, he yelled again.
Lazy Love and Crazy Cob are weaving webs to wind me. I'm far more sweet than other meat, but still they cannot find me. Here am I, naughty little fly. You are fat and lazy. You cannot trap me, though you try, in your cobwebs crazy.
Again he dashed off with the spiders after him. Then, quieter than a mouse, he stole back to free the dwarves. He quickly scrambled up one of the spider ropes hanging from the tree, only to meet an old, slow, wicked, fat-bodied spider who had remained behind to guard the prisoners and had been pinching them to see which was the juiciest to eat. Before the spider knew what was happening, it felt the hobbit sting and rolled off the branch dead. Then Bilbo began to cut away the threads wound round the first bundle.
Most likely Feely. There. Well, it is Feely. You look like one of those funny toys bobbing on a wire.
Boy, I don't feel at all well, Mr. Baggins.
I should think not, what with the spider poison and hanging half the night in this tree. Yes. Now give me a hand with the others. The spiders will be back in a minute.
All right.
Between them, they started to haul up first one dwarf and then another and slash them free. There were still five dwarves hanging at the end of the branch when the spiders began to come back, more full of rage than ever. Bilbo had taken off his ring when he rescued Feely, so now they all began to splutter and hiss.
Now we see! Nasty little creature!
Twilly chew and leave your bones and skin hanging on a tree. Yes, we will.
Come on.
Cut the others free while I keep the spiders off. Come down. Don't stay up there and be netted. They're swarming up all the neighboring trees.
With hundreds of angry spiders goggling at them all round and about and above, it looked pretty hopeless. But some of the dwarves had knives, and some had sticks, and all of them could get at stones, and Bilbo had his elvish dagger. Again and again the spiders were beaten off, and many of them were killed.
There are too many, and we're too weak. Listen, I'm going to disappear. I'll draw the spiders off if I can and make in the opposite direction. Now go!
Soon Bilbo shouted from the trees on the right. That upset the spiders greatly. They stopped advancing and went off in the direction of the voice. But the dwarves were sick and weary, and they could not go much better than a hobble and a wobble. Soon the creatures were overtaking them, and already some spiders were in the trees above them and throwing down their long, clinging threads. Then suddenly Bilbo appeared and charged into the astonished spiders from the side.
Go on, I'll do the stinging.
He darted backwards and forwards, slashing at spider threads, hacking at their legs, and stabbing at their fat bodies if they came too near. And just when Bilbo felt that he could not lift his hand for a single stroke more, the spiders suddenly gave it up and followed them no more, but went back disappointed to their dark colony. When the hobbit joined the dwarves, they all lay for some time puffing and panting. But very soon they began to ask questions, and Bilbo had to explain the whole vanishing business carefully, from the Gollum story, riddles and all, to the present. The dwarves had changed their opinion of Mr. Baggins very much, and had begun to have a great respect for him, as Gandalf had said they would. Finally, just as they were all falling asleep, Dwalin opened an eye and looked round at them.
Where's Thorin?
Thorin is gone!
It was a terrible shock. Of course, there were only 13 of them, 12 dwarves and the hobbit. Where indeed was Thorin? They wondered what evil fate had befallen him, magic or dark monsters, and shuddered as they lay lost in the forest. There they dropped off, one by one, into uncomfortable sleep full of horrible dreams. During the battle with the spiders and throughout the long night of troubled dreams, Thorin Oakenshield was in the dungeon of the wood elves. Separated from the others in the dark, he had been captured and dragged to the cave of the king, who commanded that the dwarf be brought before him.
Why did you and your folk try to attack my people at their merrymaking?
We did not attack them. We came to beg, because we were starving.
Where are your friends now, and what are they doing?
I don't know, but I expect starving in the forest.
What were you doing in the forest?
Looking for food and drink, because we were starving.
But what brought you into the forest at all? Very well. Take him away, and keep him safe until he feels inclined to tell the truth, even if he waits 100 years.
The following day, the other dwarves were also captured, all except Bilbo, who popped on his ring and slipped quickly to one side when the wood elves called the dwarves to halt. He followed the elves and their prisoners to the king's cave and slipped inside before the great gates closed behind them with a clang. The prisoners were brought before the elven king, who looked grimly at the dwarves.
Unbind them. They need no ropes in here. There is no escape from my magic doors for those who are once brought inside.
What have we done, O king? Is it a crime to be lost in the forest, to be hungry and thirsty, to be trapped by spiders? Are the spiders your tame beasts or your pets if killing them makes you angry?
It is a crime to wander in my realm without leave. Do you forget that you are in my kingdom, using the road that my people made? You have troubled my people and roused the spiders with your riot and clamor. Now, what brings you here? Take them to prison until they have learned sense and manners.
Each dwarf was put in a separate cell, and none was told that Thorin was also a prisoner of the king. It was Bilbo who found that out. After a week or two of sneaking about with the ring on, Bilbo managed to find out where each dwarf was kept. What was his surprise one day to overhear some of the guards talking and to learn that there was another dwarf in prison too, in a specially deep, dark place. He guessed at once, of course, that it was Thorin.
Psst! Thorin Oakenshield, are you inside?
Mr. Baggins, is that you?
Yes, it is. Are you all right?
For a prisoner. Are the others safe?
They're locked in cells like this.
How did you escape, Mr. Baggins? And how did you find me?
I'll tell you all about it later. I have a plan to set us all free. The gates are locked by magic, but there's another way out. A stream flows under the king's cellar, and the elves cover it with trap doors, which they open to bring in supplies that are shipped up the river.
And how are we to escape from the cells?
I haven't found out yet, but be ready to go when I discover a way.
For some time, Bilbo thought about the water gate and wondered if it could be used for the escape of his friends. Huge empty barrels sat beside the trapdoors, ready to be pushed into the river where they floated back to Lake Town at the end of Long Lake. Bilbo began to form a desperate plan. Then he heard the king's butler bidding the chief of the guards good night.
Oh, but come with me and taste the new wine that has just come in.
It's good, good.
I'll be hard at work tonight, clearing the cellars of the empty barrels. So let's have a drink first to help the labor.
Very good. I'll taste with you.
Yes,
and see if it's fit for the king's table. There's a feast tonight. It did not do to send up poor stuff.
No, right, quite right, quite right.
When he heard this, Bilbo was all in a flutter, for he saw that luck was with him, and he had a chance at once to try his desperate plan. Soon they began to drink and laugh merrily.
It must be potent wine to make a wood elf drowsy, but the chief guard is nodding his head.
Very soon he laid it on the table and fell fast asleep. The butler went on talking and laughing to himself without seeming to notice. But soon his head, too, nodded to the table, and he fell asleep and snored beside his friend.
Now to get the keys.
One more time.
But what are we going to do?
No time now. Just follow me.
But I'll...
Keep together and stay out of sight. We've got to free Thorin. He's the last one, and his cell is not far from the cellars.
I don't know why we're going this way.
Don't argue. There's a good fellow. Psst. Thorin.
Mr. Baggins.
Come out quietly.
Upon my word. Gandalf spoke true as usual. A pretty fine burglar you make, it seems, when the time comes.
Follow me and stay together.
I'm sure we're all at your service, whatever happens after this, Mr. Baggins.
This way.
Thorin.
Here we are, the king's cellars.
Now what comes next?
We'll put one in each of these empty barrels, and when they're thrown into the river and float away from the cave, we'll be free.
will be bruised and battered to pieces.
And drowned for certain.
We thought we had got some sensible notion when you managed to get hold of the keys. This is a mad idea.
Very well. Come along back to your nice cells and I'll lock you all in again and you can sit there comfortably and think of a better plan.
Well, it might work.
We could put straw around us to protect us.
And holes in the end for air.
All right, Mr. Baggins. We'll try your plan.
There was little time to lose. Before long, as Bilbo knew, some elves would come to help the butler get the empty barrels through the doors into the stream below. They soon found 13 with room enough for a dwarf in each. At last they were all stowed. Thorin turned and twisted in his tub and grumbled like a large dog in a small kennel. Balin's lid had been fitted on when Bilbo heard the sound of voices and saw the flicker of lights.
Where's old Galleon the butler?
I didn't see him at the tables tonight. He ought to be here now to show us what's to be done.
I'll be angry if the old slow coach is late. I'm no wish to waste time down here while the song is up.
There's the old villain with his head on a jug.
He's been having a little feast with his friend, the captain.
Jacob, wake him.
Come on now, old friend.
You're all late. Here I am, waiting and waiting down here while you fellows drink and make merry and forget your tasks. Small wonder I fall asleep from weariness. No.
Come give us a taste of your sleeping draught before we begin.
why, Galleon, your feasting early has muddled your wits.
What?
You've stacked some full casks here instead of the empty ones, if there's anything in wait.
Nonsense. Get on with the work. There's nothing in the feeling of weight in weak arms like yours. These are the ones to go into the stream and no others.
Farewell, very well.
On your head be it, if the king's full butter tubs and his best wine go into the river.
Down went the barrels into the stream, one after another, with many a clash and a bump, thudding on top of ones below, smacking into the water, jostling against the walls of the tunnel, knocking into one another, and bobbing away down the current. It was just then that Bilbo discovered the weak point in his plan. How was he to escape? And what would happen to the dwarves without him? As the very last barrel was being rolled to the doors, he caught hold of it and was pushed over the edge with it. Down into the water he fell, splash into the cold, dark water with the barrel on top of him. He came up again, spluttering and clinging to the wood like a rat. But for all his efforts, he couldn't scramble on top. The trap doors fell to with a boom. The voices of the elves faded away. He was in the dark tunnel, floating in icy water, all alone, for you cannot count friends that are all packed up in barrels. Finally, the barrels passed out of the tunnel into the open stream. When the barrel he was holding stuck against some hidden roots, Bilbo crawled on top and lay spread out to keep the balance. Down the river he went in the midst of the barrels. They had escaped from the wood elves, but whether alive or dead, still remains to be seen. It was a good thing Bilbo kept his ring on while he floated down the river on the barrels. For when they came to shallow water running slow and smooth, several elves were busy making up a raft of barrels, lashing them together to steer them down to Lake Town. They did not know, of course, that they were helping the dwarves escape, nor did they know there was a hobbit riding with them on the raft. The day grew lighter and warmer as they floated along. Suddenly the cliff fell away, the shore sank, the trees ended, And there, far away, its dark head in a torn cloud, loomed the mountain. All alone, it rose and looked across the marshes to the forest. The lonely mountain. Bilbo had come far and through many adventures to see it, and now he did not like the look of it in the least. It seemed to frown at him and threaten him as it drew ever nearer. Late in the afternoon, they came to the long lake, and there was the strange town he had heard the elves speak of in the king's cellars. It was not built on the shore, but right out on the surface of the lake. It was a busy wooden town, not a town of elves, but of men, who still dared to dwell under the shadow of the distant Dragon Mountain. As soon as the raft of barrels came in sight, boats rowed out from the piles of the town, and soon the raft was moored safely, while the elves of the raft and the boatmen went to feast in Lake Town. As the shades of night fell, Bilbo began to cut loose the barrels and bring them to shore to free the dwarves.
I'll have you out in a minute. Be quiet now.
So sore and stiff and bruised.
Oh, it's you, Thorin.
Yes, it is. I think. This miserable wet straw.
Well, are you alive or are you dead?
I'm not certain yet.
Are you still in prison or are you free? And if you want to go on with this silly adventure, it's yours after all and not mine. You'd better slap your arms and rub your legs and try and help me get the others out while there's a chance.
You're right, Mr. Baggins. Let's pull the others ashore and open the barrels. To thank our stars and Mr. Baggins. I'm sure he has a right to expect it.
Oh, I wish he could have arranged a more comfortable journey.
No doubt we shall feel properly grateful when we're fed and recovered. And in the meanwhile, what's next?
I suggest Lake Town. Well, what else is there?
Nothing else could, of course, be suggested. So, leaving the others, Thorin and Feely and Keely and the Hobbit went along the shore to the great bridge that connected the floating town with the shore. The guards were drinking and laughing by a fire in their hut and did not hear the noise of the unpacking of the dwarves or the footsteps of the four scouts. Their astonishment was enormous when Thorin Oakenshield stepped in through the door.
Who are you, and what do you want?
Thorin, son of Thrain, son of Thror, king under the mountain, I have come back. I wish to see the master of your town.
And who are these?
Feely and Keely of the race of Durin, Mr. Baggins, who has traveled with us out of the west.
If you come in peace, lay down your arms.
We have none. We have no need of weapons. We'll return at last to our own, as spoken of old. Take us to your master.
Yeah, he is at feast.
Then all the more reason for taking us to him. We're worn and famished after our long road, and we have sick comrades.
All right, follow me then.
The guard and his men led them over the bridge, through the gates, and into the town. They were taken to a great hall with many lights and the sound of many voices. The master of the town sprang from his chair as they entered. But none rose in greater surprise than the raftmen of the elves who were sitting at the lower end of the hall.
I am Thorin, son of Thrain, son of Thror, king under the mountain.
I return.
These are prisoners of our king that have escaped wandering vagabond dwarves that could not give any good account of themselves sneaking through the woods and molesting our people.
Is this true?
It is true that we were wrongfully waylaid by the elven king and imprisoned without cause as we journeyed back to our own land. But luck nor bar may hinder the homecoming spoken of old. Nor is this town in the wood elves' realm. I speak to the master of the town of the men of the lake, not to the raftmen of the elven king.
Although the Elven King was very powerful in those parts, and the master wished for no enmity with him, the people quickly settled the matter for him. Indeed, such excitement had not been known in the town in the memory of the oldest grandfather. The wood elves themselves began to wonder greatly, and even to be afraid. They did not know, of course, how Thorin had escaped, and they began to think their king might have made a serious mistake. Soon the other dwarves were brought into the town amid scenes of astonishing enthusiasm. They were all doctored and fed and housed and pampered in the most delightful and satisfactory fashion. Indeed, within a week they were quite recovered, fitted out in fine cloth, with beards combed and trimmed and proud steps. Thorin looked and walked as if his kingdom was already regained and Smaug chopped up into little pieces. At the end of a fortnight, Thorin began to think of departure. So he spoke to the master and his counselors and said that soon he and his company must go on towards the mountain. The master had never thought that the dwarves would actually dare to approach Smaug, but believed they were frauds who would sooner or later be discovered and be turned out. But he was not sorry at all to let them go. They were expensive to keep, so he gave them what help he could to speed them on their way. So one day, although autumn was now getting far on, and winds were cold and leaves were falling fast, three large boats left Lake Town, laden with rowers, dwarves, Mr. Baggins, and many provisions. Horses and ponies had been sent round by circuitous paths to meet them at their appointed landing place. The master and his counselors bade them farewell from the great steps of the town hall that went down to the lake. People sang on the quays and out of windows. The white oars dipped and splashed, and off they went north up the lake on the last stage of their long journey. The only person thoroughly unhappy was Bilbo. In 2 days' going, they rode right up the long lake and passed out into the river running. And now they could all see the lonely mountain, towering grim and tall before them. At the end of the third day, some miles up the river, they drew into the western bank and disembarked. Here they were joined by the horses with other provisions and necessaries, and the ponies for their own use that had been sent to meet them.
We'll camp here for the night and begin our journey in the morning.
Will you stay with us tonight before returning to Lake Town?
Not so near the shadow of the mountain. Not, at any rate, until the songs have come true.
But the night is already drawing on.
We must return. Farewell! Farewell!
What a bleak and barren place.
Once it was green and fair.
It is the desolation of the dragon, and we have come at the waning of the year.
It was a weary journey. There was no laughter or song or sound of harps, and the pride and hopes which had stirred in their hearts at the singing of old songs by the lake died away to applauding gloom. They were at the end of their journey, but as far as ever it seemed from the end of their quest. None of them had much spirit left. Now, strange to say, Mr. Baggins had more than the others. He would often borrow Thorin's map and gaze at it, pondering over the runes and the message of the moon letters Elrond had read. It was he that made the dwarves begin the dangerous search on the western slopes for the secret door. Day after day they toiled in parties searching for paths up the mountainside. Day after day they came back to their camp without success. But at last, unexpectedly, they found what they were seeking. Feely and Keeley and the Hobbit came on what looked like rough steps going upwards. It was the entrance to the secret door.
Yes, this is the place where the secret door opened.
I don't see any sign of a door.
There's no keyhole.
The door is sealed by magic and will not open until the proper spell is found.
And what are you doing, Mr. Baggins?
You said sitting on the doorstep and thinking would be my job, not to mention getting inside. So I'm sitting and thinking.
Watching these huge snails here seems to be your job.
Tomorrow begins the last week of autumn.
Yeah, and winter comes after autumn. Next year after that, and our beards will grow till they hang down the cliff to the valley. Unless something happens here. What is our burglar doing for us?
I'm beginning to think he might go through the front gate and spy things out a bit.
It's always me that has to get you out of your difficulties. What can I do? Leave me alone so I can think.
For days, Bilbo sat gazing at the stone wall, thinking. He had a queer feeling that he was waiting for something. All the dwarves were off in various places on the mountainside.
Perhaps the wizard will suddenly come back today. What's that? It's an enormous thrush, nearly coal black, knocking a snail against the stone.
Stand by the gray stone when the thrush knocks.
Stand by the gray stone when the thrush knocks. That's it! That's it! Thorin! Dwarves!
What in the deuce, Mr. Baggins? You'll have Smaug here with all that yelling.
What is it? What happened?
That thrush is knocking against the stone wall with one of the huge snails.
Well, what of it?
Really, Mr. Baggins?
Don't you remember the moon letters on the map? Elrond read them. Stand by the gray stone when the thrush knocks, and the setting sun with the last light of Durin's day will shine upon the keyhole.
That's right. And this is Durin's day, the first day of the last moon of autumn.
But the sun's almost down now.
Watch.
Look. The sun's cast a gleam of light on the smooth rock face.
A piece of rock has broken from the wall.
There's a hole in it.
The key. Try it now while there's still time.
A door 5 feet high and 3 broad was outlined, and slowly, without a sound, swung inwards. It seemed as if darkness flowed out like a vapor from the hole in the mountainside, and deep darkness in which nothing could be seen lay before their eyes, a yawning mouth leading in and down.
Now is the time for our esteemed Mr. Baggins, who has proved himself a good companion on our long road, and a hobbit full of courage and resource far exceeding his size, and, if I may say so, possessed of good luck, far exceeding the usual allowance. Now is the time for him to perform the service for which he was included in our company. Now is the time for him to earn his reward.
If you mean you think it is my job to go into the secret passage first, O Thorin Thrain's son, Oakenshield, may your beard grow ever longer, say so at once and have done.
I might refuse. I've got you out of 2 messes already, which were hardly in the original bargain, so that I'm already owed some reward. Perhaps I have begun to trust my luck more than I used to in the old days, but anyway, I think I'll go and have a peep at once and get it over.
Now, who will come with me?
He did not expect a chorus of volunteers, so he was not disappointed. Balin, who was rather fond of the hobbit, said he would go inside at least, and perhaps a bit of the way, too, ready to call for help if necessary. Not far inside the passage, he bade Bilbo, "Good luck!" and stopped. Then the hobbit slipped on his ring and crept noiselessly down, down, down into the dark.
Now you're in for it at last, Bilbo Baggins. You went and put your foot right in it that night of the party, and now you've got to pull it out and pay for it. What a fool I am. Phew, it's getting warm. Is that a kind of glow I seem to see coming right ahead down there?
It was. It was a red light steadily getting redder and redder. Wisps of vapor floated up and past him, and he began to sweat. A sound, too, began to throb in his ears, mixed with a rumble as of a gigantic tomcat purring. Bilbo stopped. Going on from there was the bravest thing he ever did. He fought the real battle in the tunnel alone before he ever saw the vast danger that lay in wait. But go on he did, until he came to the bottommost cellar of the ancient dwarves, right at the mountain's root. He peeped inside the huge cavern, and there, rising from the near side of the rocky floor, is the great glow, the glow of Smaug. There he lay, a vast red golden dragon, fast asleep. A thrumming came from his jaws and nostrils, and wisps of smoke, but his fires were low in slumber. Beneath him, under all his limbs and his huge coiled tail, and about him on all sides stretching away across the unseen floors, lay countless piles of precious things, gold wrought and unwrought, gems and jewels, and silver red stained in the ruddy light. Smaug lay, with wings folded like an immeasurable bat, turned partly on one side so that the hobbit could see his underparts and his long, pale belly crusted with gems and fragments of gold from his long lying on his costly bed. The hobbit gazed for what seemed an age. Then he stole from the shadow of the doorway across the floor to the nearest edge of the mounds of treasure. Above him the sleeping dragon lay, a dire menace even in his sleep. Bilbo grasped a great two-handled cup, as heavy as he could carry, and cast one fearful eye upwards. Smaug stirred a wing, opened a claw, and the rumble of his snoring changed its note. Then Bilbo fled. His heart was beating, and a more fevered shaking was in his legs than when he was going down, but still he clutched the cup.
I've done it! I've done it! This will show them! More like a grocer than a burglar, indeed. Well, we'll hear no more of that.
And we have Mr. Baggins to thank for the recovery of our treasure. We are at your service, Mr. Baggins.
What is that?
Quick! The door! The tunnel!
My cousins! Bomber and Bulfer! We've forgotten them! They're down below looking after the ponies!
They'll be slain and all our ponies too! We can do nothing!
Nonsense! We can't leave them. Get inside, Mr. Baggins and Balin and you two, Feely and Keely. The dragon shan't have all of us! Now, you others, where are the ropes? Be quick!
Near the perilous cliff's edge, the dwarves hauled madly on the ropes. Up came Bofur. Up came Bomber, puffing and blowing while the ropes creaked. Up came some tools and bundles of supplies. Then a whirring noise was heard. A red light touched the points of the standing rocks. The dragon came. Smaug came hurtling from the north, licking the mountainsides with flame, beating his great wings with a noise like a roaring wind. His hot breath shriveled the grass before the door and drove in through the crack they had left and scorched them as they lay hid. Every now and again through the night they could hear the roar of the flying dragon grow and then pass and fade as he hunted round and round the mountainsides. Finally, slow and silent, he crept back to his lair and half closed his eyes. The next morning they debated long on what was to be done. But they could think of no way of getting rid of Smaug, which had always been a weak point in their plans, as Bilbo felt inclined to point out. But they began to grumble at the hobbit, blaming him for what had at first so pleased them, for bringing away a cup and stirring up Smaug's wrath so soon.
What else do you suppose a burglar is to do? I wasn't engaged to kill dragons. That's warrior's work, but to steal treasure.
Always something goes wrong.
Did you expect me to trot back with the whole hoard of Thror on my back? I'd need hundreds of years to bring it all up. If I was 50 times as big and Smaug was tame as a rabbit.
Yeah, Mr. Baggins is right, of course. Excuse us if we're a trifle upset. What do you propose we should do?
I have no idea at the moment, if you mean about removing the treasure. That obviously depends entirely on some new turn of luck and the getting rid of Smaug. Getting rid of dragons is not at all in my line, but I'll do my best to think about it.
But what can we do now, today?
We can do nothing but stay where we are. I'll make you an offer. I've got my ring, and we'll creep down this very noon, then, if ever, Smaug ought to be napping, and see what he's up to. Perhaps something will turn up. Every worm has his weak spot. As my father used to say.
Yes, that's good. Good thinking.
Well, naturally, the dwarves accepted the offer eagerly. Already they had come to respect little Bilbo. Now he had become the real leader in their adventure. He had begun to have ideas and plans of his own. When midday came, he started on his journey down into the mountain. So silent was his going that smoke on a gentle wind could hardly have surpassed it, and he was inclined to feel a bit proud of himself as he drew near the lower door.
Old Smaug is weary and asleep. He can't see me, and he won't hear me. Cheer up, Bilbo.
The hobbit was just about to step out onto the floor when he caught a sudden, thin, and piercing ray of red from under the drooping lid of Smaug's left eye. He was only pretending to sleep.
Well, thief, I smell you and I feel your air. I hear your breath. Come along, help yourself again. There's plenty and to spare.
Thank you, oh, Smaug the Tremendous. I did not come for presents. I only wished to have a look at you and see if you were truly as great as the tales say. I did not believe them.
Do you now?
Truly, songs and tales were utterly short of the reality. Oh, Smaug the Cheapest and Greatest of Calamities.
You have nice manners for a thief and a liar. You seem familiar with my name, but I don't seem to remember smelling you before. Who are you and where do you come from, may I ask?
May indeed I come from under the hill and under the hills and over the hills my paths led, and through the air I am he that walks unseen.
So I can well believe it. But that is hardly your usual name.
I am the clue finder, the web cutter, the stinging fly. I was chosen for the lucky number.
Lovely titles, but lucky numbers don't always come off.
I am he that buries his friends alive and drowns them and draws them alive again from the water. I came from the end of a bag, but no bag went over me.
These don't sound so creditable.
I am the friend of bears and the guest of eagles. I am the ring winner and luck wearer, and I am Barrel Rider.
That's better. Yeah, but don't let your imagination run away with you. Lake men, so nasty scheme of those miserable barrel-trading lake men, or I'm a lizard. I haven't been down that way for an age and a day. Very well, Barrel Rider. You may walk unseen, but you did not walk all the way. Let me tell you, I ate 6 ponies last night, and I shall catch and eat all the others before long. In return for the excellent meal, I will give you 1 piece of advice for your gourds. Don't have more to do with dwarves than you can help.
Dwarves?
I know the smell and the taste of dwarves. No one better. Don't tell me that I can eat a dwarf-ridden pony and not know it. You'll come to a bad end if you go with such friends. Thief Barrel Rider? I suppose you got a fair price for that cup you took last night. Come now, did you?
Not a thing.
Well, that's just like them. I suppose they're skulking outside. And your job is to do all the dangerous work and get what you can when I'm not looking for them.
You don't know everything, O Smaug the Mighty. Not gold alone brought us hither.
You admit the us. Why not say us 14 and be done with it, Mr. Lucky Number? I'm pleased to hear that you had other business in these parts besides my gold. In that case, you may perhaps not altogether waste your time. I don't know if it occurred to you that even if you could steal the gold, bit by bit, you could not get it very far. Had you never thought of the cat? A 14th share, I suppose, or something like it. Those were the terms, eh? What about the delivery? What about shipping and handling? What about armed guards and tolls?
Thought with us. We came over the hill and under the hill by wave and wind for revenge.
Revenge! Revenge! that dare seek revenge. The Lord of Dale is dead, and I have eaten his people like a wolf among sheep. I kill where I wish, and none dare resist. I laid low the warriors of old, and their like is not in the world today. Then I was but young and tender. Now I'm old and strong. Strong, strong. Thief in the shadows. My armor is like tenfold shields. My teeth are swords. My claws, spears. The shock of my tail, a thunderbolt. My wings, a hurricane. And my breath, death.
I have always understood that dragons were softer underneath, especially in the region of the chest.
Your information is antiquated. I am armored above and below with iron scales and hard gems. No blade can pierce me.
I might have guessed it. Truly, there can nowhere be found the equal of Lord Smaug the Impenetrable.
Chest studded with jewels. Look, what do you say to that?
Dazzlingly marvelous, perfect, flawless, staggering. Old fool, why, there's a large patch in the hollow of his left breast, as bare as a snail out of its shell. Well, I really must not detain your magnificence any longer or keep you from much-needed rest. Ponies take some catching, I believe, after a long start. And so do burglars. Ho, ho, ho.
After this parting shot, Bilbo darted back and fled up the tunnel. It was an unfortunate remark, for the dragon spouted terrific flames after him, and he was nearly overcome.
Never laugh at live dragons, Bilbo, you fool. You aren't nearly through this adventure yet.
You've been listening to The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien, adapted for radio by Bob Lewis, and featuring Ray Reinhardt as Bilbo, Tom Luce as Thorin, Pat Franklin as the Elf King, and Gail Chug as the narrator. Also heard in the cast were Bernard Mays, Eric Bauersfeld, Joe Hughes, and Carl Haig.